Thank you for having me for today's seminar. My name is Takahiro Sudo, and I'm a postdoc at Ohio State University, and I'm going to talk about Milky Way's very high energy sources. So, the observations of cosmic rays indicate something in the Milky Way is accelerating protons and other nuclei to very high energies. So what you see here is the schematic illustration of the cosmic ray spectrum. So it's dominated by protons or other nuclei with a small component of electrons and antimatter. And the energy of protons and nuclei is reaching a PV energy. So it's reaching a very high energy. And observations also indicate many source class is able to accelerate particles to GV and TV energies. But what remains mysterious is which one can reach a PV energies. So searching for the origin of this hadronic PV cosmic ray or hadronic pivotrons in the Milky Way has been a long-standing issue. And this is a topic of this talk. Observationally, we already observe cosmic ray at much higher energy, but this is not topic of this talk because this could be extra galactic origin. So we focus on Milky Way sources.
So may I ask you, sorry, how do you know that this component is galactic, comes from galaxy, not extra galactic?
This is very important question. The first thing is the Larmor radius of these protons are very small, much smaller than the size of the Milky Way disk. So we naively expect that these particles are confined effectively by the Milky Way. And the second evidence is that we see a diffuse flux of very high energy gamma rays from the galactic disk, which is consistent with the interpretation that some source is producing PV cosmic ray in the Milky Way, and these PV cosmic rays are diffusing in the ISM and making gamma rays. So because of these two evidences, we think cosmic ray up to PV energy should be Milky Way origin.
So I think the second argument is more important, right? Because in principle, these rays could come from from far away and be captured by the Milky Way, right? But you say we see that they diffuse from the disk. We see some indication that there are more of them in the disk than in the halo. Is it what you are saying? From this gamma ray signal.
From gamma ray signal, yes, it's strong. I think the gamma ray signal is a strong indication that these cosmic rays are produced by the disk. Mm-hmm. The Milky Way disk, yeah.
Okay, I see. Thanks.
Yeah. At higher energies, the cosmic like 10 to 70 or 80 electron volts, the Larmor radius is much larger than the disk size of the Milky Way. So it must be extragalactic, but lower energies, it can be Milky Way origin. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. So there are various models of hadronic pivotrons. And the most important one is supernova remnants. So the idea is that supernova explodes and shock propagates through the ISM, and the shock accelerates particles. So it's theoretically motivated, and also observationally, we know that supernova remnants can accelerate particles very efficiently. So this is best candidates for decades. But recent theory and observations suggest there are some challenges to this paradigm. One, theoretically, it looks a bit difficult to reach a PV energy or beyond with supernova remnants. This is, of course, a model-dependent argument, but it might be a bit difficult for regular supernova remnants to make a PV cosmic rays. And observationally, if supernova remnants are the source of PV protons, we naively expect the detection of gamma rays at an energy of 100 PV, as we discuss next, but we don't find evidence of such high-energy gamma rays from supernova remnants yet. So this makes people a bit worried if supernova remnants could be a hadronic pivotrons. And this motivates people to propose alternative candidates like young stellar clusters or supermassive black hole or X-ray binary. But none of these source class has has a strong observational support yet. So finding hadronic sources, hadronic cosmic ray sources is very difficult because the interstellar magnetic field randomly changes the direction of cosmic rays. So cosmic ray arrival direction is almost isotropic and we cannot find the source with charged particles. Fortunately, the collision of cosmic ray protons with gases at the source produce an emission of gamma rays and neutrinos. And because these emissions of gamma rays and neutrinos are not deflected by the magnetic field, this is very important to identify the Milky Way's hadronic cosmic ray accelerators. And importantly, if the energy of cosmic ray proton is on like a PV energy, PV, then the energy of emitted gamma ray is on the order of 100 TeV, and the energy of neutrino is from 10 to 50 TeV. So searches of sources at this high energy is very important to find Milky Way's hadronic patterns. Now, observationally, in gamma rays, we made a lot of progresses over the last decades. So gamma ray observations are now actually reaching a such high energy. Such high energy means 100 TeV energies. Above 100 TeV, we already observed 12 sources in the Milky Way. So this is a very amazing progress in recent years. And some of the sources are already observed at the PV. So now observational frontier of gamma ray is reaching a very high energies. And all of these sources are really a good candidate for hadronic pavadrons. Contrary to gamma rays, in TV and PV range, there are no neutrino sources in the Milky Way yet, even after a decade of searches by IceCube. And this might sound a bit curious because the hadronic cosmic ray accelerators should produce gamma rays and neutrino at the same flux level and same energy. And we see many gamma ray sources, but we see zero neutrino sources. So this might sound curious, but this could be just because the neutrinos are difficult to detect. Maybe the current neutrino telescope just doesn't have enough sensitivity, and in future neutrino telescopes with improved sensitivity should soon find the Milky Way's hadronic cosmic ray accelerator. So let me recap that. Did you have some questions? I was not able to catch.
Neutrino sources or several neutrino events at the PV energies.
Sorry, I was only able to catch that last sentence. So could you repeat?
We have several events with PV neutrino energies.
Events at PV energies. Yeah.
Are those galactic?
We do not know yet. I think it's mostly consistent with extragalactic because it's completely isotropic.
Okay.
So we do see many neutrino events and...
Sorry, can I ask one more question?
So
say there are produced protons at PV energies and then those protons produce photons and neutrinos. That's the statement you're making, that's the
law. So those protons from Milky Way sources, those protons can make neutrino either at the source or either during diffusing in the ISM. And for extragalactic sources, maybe blazars or other collections of
How much flux should I expect?
From Milky Way?
For example, usually for photons, there is a factor, because photons come from radiation, there is a factor of alpha, basically, or alpha squared from the emission, in the flux. Hmm. So how much should I expect the size? So if the flux of protons is, let's say, 10 units, how much proton and photon and neutrino flux, just for us to understand why why you think this is an issue that we need to worry about.
What I say is it's not yet an issue because basically given a proton flux that the optical depths to this neutrino and gamma ray production is not very high. So we don't see neutrino sources in the Milky Way yet, but I think this is actually not yet an issue given the expected flux.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So it is actually not yet an issue because maybe at this very high energy, proton can escape the disk efficiently, and we don't see that Milky Way disk or sources yet. But probably this is not an issue given the expected level of expected flux. So that's yeah. So so we don't see neutrino sources. It's probably still kind of expected range. So the observational fact that I have mentioned is we see protons, which is however diffuse and isotropic. We don't know the source. And for gamma rays, we see many gamma ray sources at 100 TeV, and each gamma ray source is noted in this diamond here. Schematically, and we don't see no neutrino sources yet in the Milky Way. So this is a present observational facts. We also see diffuse flux of gamma rays, and we don't yet see diffuse neutrinos. But yeah, that is as expected. And to interpret all of these observations of protons and gamma rays and neutrino, one optimistic interpretation would be like this. Which means this each diamond, the gamma ray sources are also the source of hadronic cosmic rays. So as marked as this mark P. And also this should be source of the neutrino. So these gamma ray sources are all hadronic cosmic, maybe gamma ray sources may be all hadronic cosmic ray accelerators, which is excellent multi-messenger sources. And in this scenario, future neutron telescopes should very soon find them. So this is one interpretation of the observational facts. So now I discuss a very different alternative scenario to interpret the same observational facts. This comes from the fact that there are two distinct mechanisms to produce very high energy gamma rays. One is hadronic, as I have been discussing. The collision of protons and gases produce gamma rays and neutrino through the production and prompt decay of pions. But other mechanism is leptonic that doesn't involve protons. So the idea is that there are very high energy electrons. These scatter ambient photons to very high energies to make it gamma rays. So this is just a scattering. So it only produces gamma rays, but doesn't produce neutrinos. So if we have sources of very high energy electrons, in principle, all of these gamma ray sources could be leptonic. And for each gamma ray sources, there are very detailed studies of if this one is hadronic or this one is leptonic. And in many sources, it's consistent with either hadronic or leptonic. So in principle, maybe it's all leptonic. But then the question is, where are the hadronic sources? And this question is important because if we go back to the spectrum of cosmic rays, it's completely dominated by hadrons, and leptons are only a tiny component in the energy flux. So it might sound weird if what we see in gamma ray sky is all leptonic. But this could be still possible if these hadronic cosmic accelerators are producing little emission of gamma rays and neutrinos, because what produces gamma rays and neutrino is a collision of gases and cosmic ray protons. So if the gas column density is very thin, then such a scenario might be possible. So again, this is observational fact. diffuse protons, many gamma ray sources, no neutrino sources. And this there are a very pessimistic interpretation that is all gamma ray sources, which is blue diamond, is leptonic, which is distinct from hadronic cosmic ray accelerators. And maybe hadronic cosmic ray accelerators are very thin so that they don't produce much of emission. And in this scenario, there are no neutrino sources, which is bright enough to be detected.
Sorry, can I ask you a question? I'm a bit confused by this statement. So you're yeah. saying that
yeah.
the gammas, you're saying they are produced by scattering, but for instance, I mean, an obvious counterexample, it's for instance, in pulsars. In pulsars,
yeah.
get accelerated in magnetic fields.
Yeah.
And you get gammas without collision with any gas, right?
Yeah.
So yes. that's a counterexample to what you said, that these gammas are produced. So it wouldn't depend on the gas, the volume density or stuff like that, right?
I mean, what I mean is for leptonic sources, we don't need the gas. So it's just defined by the electron flux and the ambient photon density. So yeah, for pulsars, the gas densities are not relevant. It's just the energetics of electrons and the amount of photons that matters for pulsar models.
So I guess the statement is that the gamma, so okay. I guess the statement is that the pulsar contribution, you're saying that it's too small, that we don't care about it or something like that for gamma
I think it's opposite. Pulsar contribution to, actually I'm going to say, what I'm going to discuss is pulsar contribution to the gamma spectrum can be very significant. So it could potentially explain most of the gamma ray sources.
Okay. So
yeah.
May I ask like a number related question? Like for the sources you were talking about, like the discovered by LH something like that telescope, right? Like what's the power like emitted like in those sources?
Power like luminosity or particle energy?
Well, both,
okay. So actually, we don't exactly know the power because we don't know the distance for most of the sources. So we only know the flux. But for some sources, the power is known. So like for Crab Nebula, I think the power at 100 TeV gamma ray is like 10 to 32 or 33 erg per second. So this is a power of typical power of gamma ray sources we are talking. And the energy here we are discussing is only the highest energy, I mean the 100 TeV in gamma ray energy or above, which is detected by LASO telescope these days.
So you are saying like one of the 12 sources you were showing us before was the Crab pulsar?
One of the sources I show is associated with Crab Nebula.
Oh, okay.
So I can discuss it very soon. So what I have been saying is, so in the top panel we see the observational facts: diffuse protons, many gamma ray sources, and zero neutrino sources. And optimistically, the interpretation might be the left bottom panel. That is, the source of diffuse cosmic ray protons is what we see in the gamma ray sky. And they also produce neutrinos, but we just don't see them yet because we don't have enough sensitivity. And the very different pessimistic interpretation is the right bottom, where every gamma ray source we see is actually leptonic. And these hadronic sources are only producing only producing protons, but not making gamma rays and neutrinos. In this case, there are basically no neutrino sources. So this is a motivation of my talk. I mean, there are two extremely different theoretical interpretations possible, and I can discuss each of them in more detail. The first question is, in the right bottom panel, we say every gamma ray sources might be leptonic emitters. But then the question is, if the Milky Way actually have such an extreme leptonic accelerators that are powerful enough to explain all gamma ray sources. And then I'm gonna discuss the hadronic sources, mainly focusing on where the realistic models of hadronic accelerator lies between these two extremes of optimistic and pessimistic. Okay. Now I think I'm gonna start with the leptonic sources. I think actually I already mentioned a bit when responding to the question, but okay, so let's discuss in detail about leptonic sources. So again, leptonic mechanism is the collision of electrons and photons to produce very high energy gamma rays. So we need source of very high energy electrons. And there are a source of very high energy electrons in the Milky Way, that is pulsars. So pulsars are rapidly rotating neutron stars that is characterized by a beamed radio and gamma ray emission. And the magnetosphere of pulsar release a relativistic wind of electrons and positrons that are further accelerated when the pulsar wind starts to interact with surrounding medium to create shock. And also maybe these electron positrons might be accelerated by recognition in the pulsar wind. And observations suggest that young pulsars are very efficient accelerators of cosmic ray electrons and positrons. And the most strong evidence comes from the observations of iconic object Crab Nebula, which is 1,000 years old. And the multivariate observations of this Crab Nebula established that this is a source of very high energy electrons. And in gamma rays, we already observe Crab Nebula above an energy of PV. So this indicates the presence of electrons at the PV energy. So Crab Nebula or other young pulsars are very efficient leptonic pivotrons. And as pulsars get older, it loses energy, but still aged pulsars are still able to accelerate electrons and positrons efficiently. So this picture is a picture taken in gamma rays for two nearby middle-aged pulsars. And you can see this large extended emission of very high energy gamma rays. This is now called a TV halo. So this observation indicates the middle-aged pulsars are surrounded by a giant halo of very high energy electrons. This indicates that middle-aged pulsars, even after losing a significant amount of energy, are still efficiently producing electrons above an energy of 50 to 100 dV. So pulsars of various evolutionary stages are now established as a source of very high energy electrons exceeding 50 to 100 dV. And if we look at the sky map of gamma ray sources, many gamma ray sources, actually most of them at the highest energy, are located in the vicinity of young and powerful pulsars. So many gamma ray sources are located in the vicinity of very efficient electron sources. And for a leptonic mechanism to work, we also need a photon field, but the photon field is provided by CMB, which is basically everywhere. So in theory, all gamma ray sources actually could be explained by leptonic mechanism. And if we do a more detailed but simple modeling, then the broadband spectrum of gamma ray sources are satisfactorily explained by a very simple model where pulsars produce cosmic electrons and these cosmic ray electrons scatter photons to produce gamma ray. So these leptonic models can naturally explain observations of very high energy gamma rays for most cases. So what I have been saying is pulses are very powerful leptonic emitter, and that is energetic enough and potentially explain all of the highest energy gamma ray sources. So maybe it could be all leptonic.
Sorry, can I ask you something related? So you're saying gammas are mostly from scattering on the background CMB.
Yeah.
But isn't there this story about either the outer gap or the current sheets, whatever story you want to prefer?
Yes. Yes. So
those emit gammas. I thought those were the origin of the main gammas, or not? Maybe I'm mistaken.
That is actually, as far as I understand, that is about the pulsed emission, and it's beamed emission, and that is, I think, more about the lower energy, right? Like GV or tens of GV, where Fermi is detecting. So this is still an important issue, but what I have been discussing is a more like the highest energy, like 100 TeV or beyond. So then I think this inverse Compton scattering of CMB photon is most important.
I see.
Yeah, thank you. Right, so yeah, when I say gamma ray sources in this source, what I have in mind is mostly the highest energy regime at like 100 TeV. So lower energy with Fermi or Hess, we see more variety of sources, but we are only focusing on highest energy. Okay, now I'd like to discuss the Milky Way's hadronic cosmic accelerators, and especially where the Milky Way sources lie between. So we have optimistic interpretation where these hadronic sources are multi-messenger sources, and pessimistic interpretation where these hadronic sources are very thin and doesn't produce emission. And usually people think it should be somewhat in optimistic side. The reason is because it's what motivates the development of gamma rays and neutrino telescopes. Like we see bright flux of cosmic ray protons, and we can't find the source by charged particles. So, but they are expected to make emissions. So this is what have motivated the development of gamma ray telescopes. So people usually assume that the hadronic sources must be somewhere in the optimistic side. But I am going to show that this very pessimistic interpretation where these sources are very thin and make no emission is also possible. Okay. So there are three important quantities that define how much emission these hadronic cosmic ray accelerators might produce. One is the energy budget in cosmic ray protons. So the idea is that if there are more protons, then there are more emission. So that's very simple. The next important quantity is the amount of gas. So because what produces gamma rays and neutrinos is the collision of gases and protons. So if there are more gases, then there are more collisions and more gamma rays and neutrinos. The last important quantity is the length or time scale of cosmic ray confinement. How long these particles can be confined. If source can confine cosmic ray over a long lifetime, then cosmic ray can have more chance to collide with gases at the source. And the first quantity is actually fixed based on the cosmic ray data. Now the important source properties are the gas density and the time scale of confinement, which I call N and tau. So this leads us to introduce the idea of N tau plane. So the idea is x-axis is the source gas density, and y-axis is the confinement or escape time of the cosmic rays. And if there are more gases, or if there are longer confinements, there are more gamma and neutrino emission, which means that in this direction, there are more gamma and neutrino sources in the Milky Way. And observations can constrain the parameter space on this N tau plane. Now I'm going to use the data of cosmic rays, gamma rays, and neutrinos. For cosmic ray, I can calibrate the model with various observations, which is consistent each other within a factor of a few. And for gamma rays, we use the detection of 12 sources at above 100 TeV by loss of collaboration. This, like as you see in this picture. And then for neutrino, we use the non-detection by decade of searches by Ice Cube. So non-detection should give some constraints. Now I'm gonna ask two different questions using this N-subplane. The first question is, we see 12 sources in the gamma ray sky. And the question is, if all of them could be hadronic cosmic accelerators. This is extremely optimistic. Everything must be multi-messenger. The answer is yes. In principle, all of these highest energy gamma ray sources we see might be hadronic cosmic accelerators. But such a scenario is possible if just N and tau is in this narrow region of blue band. So this requires a very high gas density and confinement time. And three stars here represent models of hadronic pervatrons. And you might see one model is consistent with such an interpretation. One model is on the blue band, but such a model is actually ruled out because of the non-detection of neutrino sources by Milky Way, which constrains the parameter space to below this dotted line.
So in this scenario, the sources of gamma rays are not pulsars anymore, right? And the fact that there are nearby pulsars is just pure coincidence, or how is it interpreted?
In this scenario, yes, it's all supernova remnants. So the association of very high energy gamma with pulsar must be just a coincidence in this scenario. Yes, this is actually not very surprising because we see pulsars in the vicinity of gamma ray sources. So most naturally, we would expect pulsars are making these gamma ray sources, but in principle, if there is a pulsar, this means that there are recent supernova explosion, which means that there might be supernova remnants, which is already not visible. So in principle, it could be possible, but this might be a bit extreme.
Yeah, I still don't understand. So this supernova remnants here, they would be the same, like remnants of the same supernova that produced pulsars, or that would be just another one?
Here we are not having any particular supernova remnants in mind. We are already doing kind of representative parameter for supernova remnants.
Right. No, but they kind of depend. We know that they evolve, right? More or less have some idea how they evolve. So I wonder if they should be younger or kind of younger than the nebulas of those pulsars, or they're consistent. You know, like parameters that you need for these hadronic mechanisms that are consistent with the age of the pulsars.
Pulsars. I consider this hadronic accelerators are most likely supernova remnants. So.
Yeah, in other words, I'm asking something simple. So can the supernova remnants be the same as the ones that produce the pulsars or not? But by the age, just by the age of known age of pulsars or estimated age of pulsars and what you need for your hadronic mechanism.
I see. I think in principle, yes, but I have to probably think about this a bit more. I think this should be consistent at least, but
I have another question.
But you are not imposing this constraint. You are just considering like supernova remnant abstractly, right? As a
yeah.
Okay.
Here, I'm only considering supernova remnants, but you know, this is kind of a model dependent thing. So I only plot supernova remnants here, but in principle, we can also put any models like maybe pulsars produce protons or maybe X-ray binary or whatever. In each model should be one single point on this plane. So in principle, we can think about pulsars or X-ray binaries or anything as a hadronic accelerators and put one star on this plane and see if it's consistent with gamma ray or neutrino data.
Okay. So I have a different question on how can you use the neutrino data as a constraint here?
So
I thought the point was that we have events, but we just haven't seen coincidence. So in principle, there could still be sources. It's just that we haven't seen the partner gamma rays or cosmic rays with those.
So the idea here is that, you know, we fix the amount of cosmic rays. So if gases, there are too much gases, or if cosmic ray confinement is too efficient, then ice cube at least must at least see one source in the Milky Way, which might be irrelevant to the gamma ray sources.
But so that are compatible with a source in the galaxy. I thought that was true. They haven't seen coincidences, but they certainly have events that overlap with the galactic plane.
Right. Yes, that's true. So, yeah, some of them might be actually coming from galactic sources, but if source gas density is this high, then we would expect a multiplet of clustering of neutrino from a source region, which we, I think, don't see yet.
Oh, I see. You say we should have more statistics.
More, I think, yeah, at least the amount of neutrino must be several neutron events should be clustered enough in a compact region, and the ice cubes should identify them as a source if hadronic cosmic ray sources have this high gas density. So this is what I'm saying here.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So the bottom line here was it might be possible that most gamma ray hadronic cosmic ray accelerators are energetic enough to explain all gamma ray sources, but this probably requires somewhat very high gas density and confinement time, and also this requires a bit optimistic interpretation. Now the opposite scenario is all gamma ray sources we see is leptonic, and hadronic cosmic ray accelerators are very, very thin. And such a scenario is actually possible if the source parameter is below this dotted line. So if n and tau is below this dotted line, which means that we do not yet see hadronic cosmic ray sources in the highest energy gamma ray sky yet. So you see, it's actually such a scenario is consistent with a wide range of models. So it might be that we still don't see it might be that existing gamma ray observations at the highest energy are not yet probing the hadronic cosmic accelerators. And one particular data point I want to mention is this red circled one, supernova remnants. So remember that all these models are calibrated to the cosmic ray data. And this supernova remnant is far below this dotted line, which means that even if ordinary supernova remnants are the origin of PV hadronic cosmic rays, it's actually natural that we don't see them in 100 TV gamma rays, because simply because n and tau is not sufficiently high. So some people are worried because we don't see supernova remnants at these highest energies, but this is actually something expected or natural. And the other data point here represents the scenario where supernova remnants produce PV cosmic rays. And there are giant molecular clouds in the vicinity of the supernova remnants that are very efficient target of to produce pionic gamma neutrinos. And you can see this scenario, it starts to be studied with the existing gamma ray telescopes. And this collaborates with recent observations that is this discovers some interesting system that is a supernova remnant that are colliding, probably colliding with a gas cloud. And this is a promising hadronic, a promising candidate for hadronic cosmic rays. But the idea is that the point was that maybe for regular supernova remnants, the existing observations might not be probing such a scenario. We only probe scenario where the supernova remnants are in the vicinity of giant cloud. So for hadronic sources, the most optimistic case where gamma ray sources all hadronic is in principle allowed, but might be optimistic. On the contrary, in the pessimistic scenario, all hadronic accelerator might be very thin is actually allowed for a wide range of parameter space. So now the last thing is how to make progress for future to differentiate all these hadronic optimistic and pessimistic scenarios. And the most straightforward idea is neutrinos. So hadronic sources produce gamma rays and neutrinos, but leptonic sources only produce gamma rays. So neutrino is really a decisive way to find hadronic cosmic ray accelerators. And in future, the existing ice cube is expected to be upgraded to Gen 2 and with increased volume by a factor of, I think, 8. And also we are expecting ocean-based neutrino telescopes, which have a very good angular resolution. And again, in this plane of N and tau, I can plot prospects for source detection for Gen 2. So this plot is a bit messy, but you can only focus on this green area where we might expect the detection of hadronic accelerators by Gen 2. So you can see for a large parameter space, Gen 2 is very promising to find pervatrons, but it might also find zero sources if hadronic pervatrons are seen. So for example, if you take this case of supernova remnants, if supernova remnants are regular supernova remnants are hadronic cosmic accelerators, naively, we might not see any of them by Gen 2, but maybe in the supernova remnant, the shock should compress the gas density and increase, shock could compress the gas to increase the density, and then we might find one supernova remnant by Gen 2. So this is a prospect for future. Now, I'm gonna mention some more different idea that is finding nearby sources. So finding cosmic ray sources are difficult because cosmic rays are randomly deflected because of the turbulent magnetic field. So the arrival direction have a little anisotropy. But there might be exception to this case, which is the highest energy electrons. So electrons cool more rapidly for higher energy. So if energy is larger and larger and larger, then the distance they can travel is shorter and shorter and shorter. So highest energy electrons must come from very nearby. And as we increase energy at extremely high energies, there must be some regime where only one source can make contribution to the observed flux. In this situation, even in the presence of magnetic deflection, there are only one source, which is coming from a very vicinity of the Earth. So in principle, we might be able to identify the source by using anisotropy. And the important question is, so what is this energy range? Where is the energy range where only one source can contribute? And we are currently working on this, and it's promising that maybe future observations will soon see the the endpoint of this electron spectrum. In this sense, we might be able to identify nearby cosmic accelerators directly from charged particles without using emission. And then, even at higher energy, there are no electron sources near in the vicinity of the Earth. So this is the point where interesting astrophysics end, but it might be a starting point where more interesting exotic scenario starts. I mean, in this high energy, there are no astrophysical source that are plausible. So if we see any signal in this energy range, it could be exotic scenario like a decaying of dark matter. So at the highest energy electron might serve as a clear window to search for dark matter signatures. Okay, so I can go to the conclusion. So we see diffuse flux of hadronic cosmic rays, and we see many gamma ray sources, but we don't see neutrino sources yet. And I try to think about the consistent interpretation of these observables. And optimistically, maybe the highest energy gamma ray sources, I mean 100 CV gamma ray sources, are hadronic cosmic ray accelerators, and they are excellent target for multi-messenger studies. But stellar alternative pessimistic exists, that is, the origins of hadronic cosmic ray and the highest energy gamma ray sources are completely disjoint. And future improvement in neutrinos are really the key to isolate these two scenarios. And also, I pointed out that extreme high energy electrons might be an interesting window to find a nearby cosmic ray sources and potentially a unique window for exotic particle searches. Okay, thank you for the attention.
Yeah, I have a question. Did you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So I thought the problem is we can't identify the hadronic sources, right? But the last bit said was about the looking for electrons. So that's how we look
for. That is true. Yes. So I have been discussing that. Oh, we can't find hadronic sources. And in the end, I have said is, if it's leptonic sources, we could use charged particles. So it is true that directly finding hadronic accelerator by charged particle is probably very challenging. So we might need neutrinos. In principle, it might also be possible that the source of highest energy electrons are also the source of highest energy protons. But yeah, it is very difficult to find hadronic hadrons.
So that's our sort of hope, yeah, that the same sources that emit electrons would emit hadrons, right? That's
if so, same source produce electrons and positrons, then the last idea work for hadronic hadrons. But maybe it might not be the case. Yeah.
So I have another question. So
yeah,
you were talking about these 12 resolved or identified gamma ray sources. You mentioned that some of them are compatible with leptonic or hadronic origin. So this means that there is something in the spectrum or the spatial extent of the signal that you can use to distinguish. And I guess so that the gamma ray data will become better. So perhaps you can also get better at being able to tell whether this is a leptonic or hadronic source.
Yes. So as the gamma ray data gets better, so the hope is that at the highest energy, and also using radio or X-ray constraints and with broadband gamma ray spectra, and as all the multi-wavelength data gets better, the hope is that maybe at some point, without neutrino, we could isolate hadronic or leptonic scenarios. At this moment, as far as I understand, so Crab Nebula, I think, is a very convincing leptonic accelerators, but for other sources, it's always a debate if it's convincingly leptonic or hadronic, even after this improved data of gamma rays and other wavelengths. So in principle, so the problem is that with lasso as the highest energy gamma rays, we don't have a great angular resolution. So we only see this giant blob of gamma rays. And in this giant blob, there are pulses, but also maybe some star cluster or supernova remnants. So it's very challenging to isolate the source. So hopefully in future with CTA, we might be able to better resolve the gamma ray sources and get the map. And combining them with X-ray data, I think we might be able to finally convincingly find hadronic sources. But I think at this moment, it's probably challenging.
OK, thank you.
Can I ask you yet another question? So that you have all these gamma sources and PV neutrinos have been observed. And then again, the problem is that those have, the PV neutrinos have been observed, but there's no electronic counterpart. But isn't there, like, I don't know, just like statistically, could it be that some of these PV neutrinos that we have seen, at least some of them, are they statistically consistent with being some of these gamma ray sources?
So as far as I understand, not yet. Even yes, no, there are no evidence that gamma ray sources I think there are no evidence that these neutrinos are coming from gamma ray sources yet. Even if we do, for example, like stacking analysis or like that. So I think we at this moment I think we cannot. At this moment, we cannot say where these neutrinos are coming.
If you cannot say where these neutrinos are coming, then it's a statistically consistent hypothesis to say that they are coming from these gamma ray sources?
No. It's opposite. I mean, statistically, it's coming completely from isotropic distribution, which means that there's no evidence where it's coming from any gamma ray source or Milky Way disk or whatever. So there are no preference, even statistically, that gamma ray sources are making neutrinos.
So what happens if tomorrow Ice Cube tells us, one, we have seen a source in the galaxy, or two, we have seen a sufficient accumulation of neutrinos on the galactic plane that we think these have galactic origin?
That's a very important point. So first, if maybe we should start from a diffuse flux. So first thing is that maybe very soon, like maybe in the end, Ice Cube might discover some portion of neutrino might be coming from the galactic disk. So this is, of course, very helpful to understand the hadronic cosmic accelerators. It still doesn't tell about gamma ray sources. If the emission is coming from the entire galactic plane, it might be able to tell that galactic disk is producing a diffuse emission of gamma rays and neutrinos, but it cannot tell anything about the source yet, gamma ray sources yet, because maybe these protons escape the source very quickly and propagate through the ISM and produce enough emission. So diffuse emission helps to understand the production and propagation of cosmic ray in the ISM, but it still doesn't tell about the origin of gamma ray sources. And if Ice Cube eventually see a single source in the galactic plane, in the galactic plane, then this basically tells us that if it coincides with gamma ray sources, that gamma ray sources must be hadronic. And in this case, this basically means that this at least one single source is hadronic cosmic accelerators. In terms of my calculation, this would constrain this would put a very strong constraint on the plane of gas density and cosmic confinement and should very strongly constrain the source models.
More questions, maybe from Zoom? Okay, let's thank the speaker again.
Yeah, thank you so much. I enjoyed a lot of questions.